We are going.
Everybody knows you.
We're being in public hearing, North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, February 27th, 2014. This is Paul. Okay, good. We do have two public hearings on the agenda tonight, in addition to an otherwise rather full meeting list. So before we kind of launch into the others, I wanted to suggest to commissioners for agenda items 7 and 8, if you would consider that we kind of preset a no more than 45-minute time for those. I wouldn't even mind hearing something shorter, but certainly no more than 45. Is that...
For which ones?
7 and 8. Considering the design guidelines and the marijuana standards, zoning regulations. So I'm just thinking, if we really drag on one, we're going to begin.
Okay.
All right. Minutes February 13th Planning Commission meeting. Motion.
Moved to approve.
Second.
Corrections, comments? Okay, public hearing. So we have back before us tonight amendments to the low impact development street standards, North Bend Municipal Code 1905.020i. Excuse me. Oh, daggone it. I didn't go over that. Piper coached you, didn't she? I'm going to back up.
I did. He's my backup tonight.
Public comment on non-agenda items.
Travis Bridgman, 713 Eagle Avenue, Murphy. I'm curious and intrigued to see how effective and productive the meeting can be, so I'll hold my my random comments for tonight.
Are you suggesting we should be saying?
Thanks, Chris.
That's an excellent way to say it. He's a politician right there.
Follow that.
That's great.
All right. Now, thank you, Scott. I'll move on to agenda item number 4, public hearing amendments to LID street standards, North Bend Municipal Code 1905.020i. And we are expecting action on this tonight. Seeing that we have virtually our crowd, I will dispense with most of the overall hearing pieces, other than to say we'll open the public hearing. It is to consider changes to the LID street standards. There is a sign-up sheet, and obviously would take comments from the floor as well. There are written and recorded minutes. After the public hearing, we are expecting to take action. And with that, I'll turn it over to staff.
Okay, just a brief summary. We have introduced this to you previously. Actually, we've taken this issue up at two different meetings. Just to kind of summarize, the CED Council Committee requested that we bring this topic to you for evaluation. The request was to add a second parking lane to the existing LID street standards, and that parking lane at that point in time was a 7.5-foot parking lane, which would match the other side of the road at 7.5 feet. Since that time, we had some input from our Public Works Department, and as a result, what we have in front of you is the street standards that were originally proposed, but instead of the 7.5-foot parking lanes, now the parking lanes are 8 feet, and the lanes remain 9 feet. Is there any questions from the Planning Commission?
Just a clarification, I guess. Some of this debate was to have the width of the parking lanes. Mm-hmm. Was it the same time that they were talking about having sidewalks on both sides of the street? those conversations kind of overlapped, or was it a separate, we need wider parking spaces?
With the council committee or with the...
Well, where the creation of why we're looking at this right now.
Why we're looking at this is more of a desire to have additional width and parking within the drive portion of the right-of-way. It was not originally intended to include the sidewalks and planter strips, but that did come up at one point during our first meeting. And I do have to point out, because Megan actually has given you guys a diagram of a cross-section of the street standard as it is today in the packet, which is the 8-foot parking lanes and the 9-foot lanes. And I'd like to thank her for that, because it was very nicely done.
Yep, yeah, agreed.
Okay, if that concludes staff reports, anyone from the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing. All right. Moving right along. Agenda item 5, Planning Commission review and recommendation on agenda item 45, LID street standards. I'll share that I'm going to offer a motion in a moment, but I'll wait to see what else you guys have to say.
I have comments, but the big subject that always strikes me, it's the concept of the city is, the objective is to provide housing for the people who want to live in the city. That's, and then protect that whole scenario that fits with that. And every time we widen the street, we're protecting the cars on the streets versus the housing that's related to it. And that's the first snapshot. And I look at this, which again, thank you. In my notes, I needed somebody to tell me. How wide are we talking about? Everything combined. Thank you.
Sure.
I'll use this 61 feet because it's spelled out here. The width of this sidewalk to sidewalk space. Another way to say it is owner of the lot to owner of the lot across the street space. Every 61 feet, you can imagine a house fitting in 61 feet, the frontage of a house. So every 61 by 100, if you will, is a lot that we're eating up in every neighborhood by the street or the use of the corridor that goes through the neighborhood. It may be a little trite, but if you look at the way the two parking lanes sit adjacent to the two driving lanes, I'm sure I could drive three semis down there side by side between the parked cars. So just as we go into this, I want to do it all the right way. That piece keeps popping up in my head about what are we doing with the land use that relates to the city, which is made up of people who live there. Are they more interested in driving through the neighborhoods at breakneck speed because they can drive real quick in that street? Or would they rather have a little bit bigger backyard, a little bit bigger front yard? And then maybe there's an economic benefit to that because each of those homes then might be worth a little bit more. So.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah.
I think for me, what this reminds me of is our little field trip that we went on how many years ago?
Several years now.
It was a long time
ago. Down to West Seattle?
Yes. Yeah. And just this thing that got implanted in all of us about trying to make sure that when we are looking at things, is the amount of cement to grass and trying to keep that to a minimum. And this, just to me, was like, holy moly, we are so far off of that concept of what I thought that we were trying to get to then. So, and I actually drove through the one neighborhood the other day, and granted the little, I forget what they're called, the little bulb outs in the middle of the driving section where there wasn't an obvious place, oh, someone might cross there. It's like, yeah, it does create this kind of closed feeling, and I'm trying to imagine if it wasn't there, like, does that feel like it's safe, unsafe, is there plenty of room? And I felt like if those weren't there, it was a whole different kind of feeling, and felt like, oh, that felt like the right thing. So.
I guess I'm coming at it thinking of its low-impact development standards and where you're saying the amount of cement or paving that we're going to have covering the surface. Understanding from our last discussion, the two-car garages and parking for two or three more cars in the driveway and how much on-street parking is necessary is going to lead me into a motion to make an amendment.
It's been a while since I kind of did my field trip on this, and we actually went and rode bikes and did some things like that. And from a like space perspective, when you have vehicles on both sides of the road, I was surprised by the amount of on-street parking that I saw on both sides. With even driveways kind of, observing driveways more or less being empty, you have cars on the road. And like you're saying, Jay, I recognize that if there's one car, yeah, it feels like a real open way, but when you're on a bike and there's a car, it becomes a whole door scenario. A car, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's passing another car. I felt like the speeds were, because of the bulbouts and stuff and how often they come along, the speeds kept down because of that. So,
yeah. I've got some comments, and I went so far. This one's troubled me a lot, and I'm going to share with you actually some written comments, and we'll see how many I've got, if I've got enough for public or not. So, whether Gary makes his motion or I make a motion, basically where I'm coming from is I don't support a second parking lane. I do support the wider parking lane, it's existing. I became convinced of that. I also support taking out the mid-block bulb outs. That made a lot of sense to me. I could be convinced to take out the bulb out on one side of the front edge, but I don't feel strongly about that one. But essentially, what I looked at here was the right-of-way build-out in our LID neighborhoods that exists, 52 to 56 feet is what's there. Seems to be adequate for those other neighborhoods. The amended section that I'm suggesting will give us a 53-foot right-of-way right down the middle. The proposal before us tonight at 61 feet would actually be the largest right-of-way in the city to any of our neighborhoods. That just didn't feel right. And that's not all pavement. That's total right-of-way. But because of the impact of biosphere, it gets really wide. The second piece of that is the actual paved section. And when I looked at the chart that was provided by staff, it kept just coming back to me that more than about 28 feet didn't feel right for a neighborhood street. Not a collector, not an arterial, but a neighborhood street where we're looking to design down, control speeds, make them pedestrian friendly, so on and so forth. And so in those existing neighborhoods, again, Wood River, Old Sideview, New Sideview, 21 to 28 feet of pavement. This section would be 28 feet the way that I'm measuring it, which I understand there's still a little bit of question mark. I don't know if the staff's got better info, but typically in the gutter section that we have in our standards, you've actually got a 1 foot flat and a 6-inch curve, right? So you've actually got a foot there on either side, in addition to the actual asphalt. So the way that I was measuring, I'm getting 28 feet combined.
And could you explain to me? Yeah, because I came up with 34 feet,
yeah. And
I'm
and 32 with what you're saying.
So 18.9 is. I went 998, and I'm allowing that you've got a foot of curb on
your side. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's what you're
not how it is now.
Not how it is. How it is. Oh, okay. I'm suggesting.
It's sorry. Much clearer. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. I was right. Yep. With you. So that's what I'm looking at. And in support of that, then, I'm going to propose some additional findings for the report. And I'll go through those I guess I should make this part of a motion. I guess
I like the discussion. Yeah, that's going good. By the way, thanks for this. This is awesome.
Yes.
Well,
very well done.
It's been trouble. So, so essentially, my motion is to amend North Bend Municipal Code 1905-020I as presented to us to strike 1 8-foot parking.
Second.
Second. So, in further discussion, then again, the proposed additional findings that go along with that motion. I think, and it was great that Resolution 639 was in our packet, because as I read that, it just reinforced to me where I was already going. You know, it calls for human scale and a sense of community. It calls for ecological responsibility. It calls out that we're building streets, not highways, that are intended to be more pedestrian than auto design. And I agree with everything that's in that city vision statement. So I guess individual. I'll just stop there with that's the motion, is to reduce that 8 foot out of there, and then. Perhaps, I guess, to take up the findings as a separate piece of that.
So is there, are we still in discussion over here?
I'm not recommending any change to what was presented by staff for the bowl valve or the widening from 7.5 to 8. I agree with the 8. I'm just simply saying a second parking lane should come out.
So, these are questions just to kind of recap. So, are there some staff aware of these numbers? For example, the 5 foot wide setback, is that ADA kind of typical street standards? Where does the 5 foot sidewalk officiate? Where does it come from?
That's pretty much standard ADA. It's based on two people passing each other and
so that,
wheelchair
that's a
and
tried and true number that is not being okay.
It's
and
pretty
then
standard.
9 foot wide traffic lane. Is that?
That's the minimum that we meaning cities and fire departments allow.
Okay.
Two fire trucks can or a fire truck can utilize. They need 18 to 20 feet. They like 20 feet, but they need 18 feet.
Okay. I don't know where this fits in the middle of your motion, and I apologize if I'm wrangling the horse in the wrong way. But I'm sitting here thinking, not just about the parking lane that's being discussed. So I'm thinking here about how could I cut this space in half? Where would I go to do that? Do I take out one of the sidewalks? Do I have two narrower planter strips on both sides of the road? All those things kind of float through. Mm-hmm. Because this is just, to me, it's a huge mistake to take up this much land for traffic. And I even throw in another idea, looking out in the distance. We're spending a whole bunch of time and energy focusing on electric vehicles and other things like it. None of them are the size of the F-150 I'm driving today. I appreciate the 9 foot curb today. I might not in 10 years.
So I guess if I could respond, I understand where you're going. My focus is on more on impervious surface. Than really the overall, because so one of the things, of course, that's driving the overall width of the right of way is the 11 foot minimum bridle channel, and that's a trade off for typical pipe and pond. And so, I do accept that from my perspective that the bridle channel supports more our environmental goals, our sustainability goals for the on site infiltration than losing a lot or two lots to a pond, which I find less aesthetically pleasing than the way the storm pond is done. So, and just to be very clear about that, my view is not driven by lot yield. It's driven by impervious surface and what I think we're trying to get to in a walkable, safer community, aesthetically pleasing community.
And just kind of add to that. This, you know, one thing to keep in mind, and I'm just elaborating on the biochannel, is this road section is a section that acts as your stormwater system also. So it's a dual public corridor. You know, it's functioning two different ways. And that is very different than how other developments have occurred up until about now, really, until about mid-2000s. So when you read this, we actually say this is the minimum, but developers may choose to use the other planar strip as a biochannel also. And it actually, you know, I don't know if you've walked Cedar Falls, but it really does provide a really nice walking environment because you have quite a bit of landscaping next to you. And I think it ultimately, what we're being told is these neighborhoods in North Bend are actually some of the fastest sailing neighborhoods. Even over, you know, Snoqualmie Ridge has been doing well, but much more successful than elsewhere in the close proximity of North Bend. And, you know, I can't say, and, you know, there's all kinds of factors to that, but quality of design is one. And integrating your stormwater system into your street system to create an amenity, which is landscaping, is actually a very, I think, wonderful part of what you've got going here.
Yep, so. I agree.
Question for Jenna. Do sidewalks impact the bioswale the same as driving lanes?
No, sidewalks are considered clean water coming off them because they don't have the oils and what have you. So they can actually, they could actually be pervious and drain right into and not have to be treated and all kinds of different.
Although they're not, the sidewalk's not actually pervious in our standard. If you're saying don't need to be, it could be, and don't need to provide the filtration.
Right.
I'm going to actually, in a second here, propose to amend my motion to actually include the findings, do it all this one. Before I do that, I corralled Councilmember Rosen to come tonight, so I want to make sure that he has an opportunity to share it.
We may differ on this, but that's okay. I think most of you guys know, I want to see the extra parking lane. 8 feet is not as important. 7.5 is really fine. I'm probably going to beat a dead horse here, so I'm not going to go on too long about it. But just to summarize, because a couple of you might not have been here last time, I've gotten a lot of feedback, and almost actually all of it has been very negative about the sense of how tight things are in the new developments, how they feel we're replicating the ridge again, and why are we doing that? That's not exactly what we don't want to be. We want it to be more rural, more open space. I think people do feel that the parking, having parking on both sides is a luxury that we didn't want to give up so quick. I think going through the newer developments, especially all the ones that have these your fences in your backyard, you find that the street tends to be the place where all the kids are playing now. Go through our neighborhood, and that's almost all the kids. That's, like it or not, that's where they play, because the backyards, every yard is fenced in, so the kids cannot go from yard to yard, and they tend to play in front of the house, in the front yards of the street. That seems to be where a lot of activity does occur. I will remind you, the right-of-way is much larger here than it has been in the past, because part of that is the bioswale. So that is adding, you know, 11 feet to your right away there. In the past, obviously, we've used the retention ponds. And I don't want to get rid of the ponds, so I like it. So that's something. And I was just, and we're quite a ways apart. And I was just thinking while you were talking, you know, where can we find some common ground? Maybe find some compromise. And one of my thoughts, and that's why I asked about the sidewalks, is, from what I'm hearing, the concern, some of it is also such a wide right-of-way and the curvy surfaces and all that. What about adding a 7.5-foot parking lane and removing the 5-foot sidewalk? So now we're adding only about 2.5 feet total. And I'm just trying to find, you know, trying to see if we can find something maybe in the middle that works for everyone. You're getting rid of the width. We're reducing the parking lane by a foot, you know, overall. And by getting rid of the sidewalk, we're also helping to reduce that space, wasted space, as you know, as it referred to.
Yeah.
Any interest in that?
So you're saying just get rid of one of the sidewalks on one side of Route 2, there would only be a sidewalk on one side, but there could potentially be homes on two sides.
And then bring the parking lanes back down to 7.5 feet.
Thanks. As the maker of the motion, I'll share that I thought about.
And
I thought particularly about the sidewalk piece because I've jokingly suggested several times that maybe that should be the answer. But as I actually gave it serious thought, I kind of fell back on the conclusion that you do want to have convenient off walking paths and. The side that the parking is on, well, I kind of think that's where you want to have the sidewalk for sure. And I thought about access to homes on the other side, and particularly if they're behind bioswale, and I thought you want to be able to walk behind that bioswale to go house to house. And so I, at least in my head, I couldn't quite juggle those and come up with it. But again, if it could make sense, you know, to staff, or if it makes sense to others, I could certainly support the sidewalk on one side. I think the 7.5 foot lane, I certainly came in not feeling that was too narrow, but through staff discussion and presentation, I came to agree that a little bit more width would make it, you know, more comfortable. So I wanted to support that.
And I was just thinking about, you know, what the feedback I'm hearing consistently with the new developments. Mm-hmm. And that's something I thought of just as speaking tonight. Is what would they value more? Maybe that's a question. Do you think the public would like to see an extra parking lane more than a sidewalk?
I think that's really where the crux is because we're talking about two of them. Things. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the narrowness of a parking lane making it feel uncomfortable that you're going to hit a mirror or something like that versus actual number of parking spaces. And that's really where I landed at saying, in our goals and everything we're trying to support, it just didn't make sense to me to add more impervious surface, to add more parking spaces that on a typical day in a typical situation we're not needed, not building to peak, but building to the typical day. And that's where I landed.
So I'm going to get out of the box completely for a second because I think the root of the problem is more demographic and change in the way people live. It's not because they've just all of a sudden gotten two cars per driver. It's because their garage is full of stuff that used to be stored somewhere else. Either the college kid's still home or the college kid's left and the stuff's still in the garage, or they've accumulated from relatives or whatever. So that's the fact of where we all are. The crazy outside the box idea is in this same neighborhood where we're talking about increasing the streets so people can park on the street as opposed to park in their garage. What if every one of those houses had a tandem or always had three car parking space garage door, something to that effect, so that they was like the old story of the attic that used to be up above everything.
More crap will go in it.
Well, maybe. But what we're doing is creating, you know, we're squeezing the lots, so we may or may not have room to park that car in the driveway anymore in front of the garage door. It's going to be convenient if it's barely a fit to always park on the street. People get the habit and just always park on the street. And it really stems from the idea that there's no space in the garage where they would probably park if they could easily. And we're widening the streets because that's the Snoqualmie story that you mentioned. That's exactly why.
Yeah, like, I think our Saturday Association actually has in their requirements that you're not allowed to park in the driveway overnight. No one, absolutely no one adheres to it, but it's in there. So, you know, we all try to find these things, but nobody listens. Yeah. I think it's another thing.
We are not allowed to park in the street overnight.
Right.
And you're only allowed to park your car in front of your house and not move it for like 72 hours. But again, everyone in the neighborhood has, it's a tandem or it's a three-car garage. So for those people who have their garage packed full, they can still have two or three or four cars in the driveway.
Yeah, you have very deep lots.
Yeah. Well, but now, I mean, you could still, but you could park three cars in the driveway, or two or three cars in the driveway and not on the street.
Yep.
So.
So now you've brought me right back to where I started.
Yeah.
Land use. Mm-hmm. We're squeezing the lots because we're opening the streets.
Yep.
So the lot can't afford, in a lot of different ways, financially and space and everything else, it can't afford to expand something not quite as functional like a garage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, just a quick question for staff, because wasn't there a minimum setback in these lots?
Yeah, you know, I think you guys are...
You did talk about how many cars could fit in that.
And I don't believe space. For a minute that the developer is going to enlarge the lot if we give them the room. That's...
No.
You know, the lot's going to be 40 feet wide, 50 feet wide, 60 feet wide, and it's going to be 80 to 100 deep, and they're going to squeeze every lot they can. Mm-hmm. And so again, my motion's not about lot yield. It's about impervious surface and providing adequate. So at this time, I would like to amend my motion to include the following findings, and I'll read them out so that those who listen instead of get a chance to read, and particularly because my understanding is this goes to council before on Tuesday, right? So, amend my previous motion to add the following findings, and I've numbered them 5 through 8 because there are 4 findings currently. So 5, the proposed amendments support the city's vision as described in Resolution 639. For a pedestrian-friendly, aesthetically pleasing, connected and natural environment. 6, the proposed amendments support the city's comprehensive plan, energy and sustainability element. 7, the proposed amendments continue to support stormwater management best practices for on-site infiltration and treatment, thus minimizing stormwater runoff and further strike a balance between total non-permeable surface areas while providing adequate homeowner parking. And 8, the proposed amendments continue to ensure a minimum average of 5 parking spaces per household, which provides regular support for residents and thus supports professional planning and engineering practices. Who seconded my motion? Gary?
I second the amendment.
Okay, thank you.
What was the amendment?
So the amendment was the findings. So the motion is to strike 1 8-foot parking lane from the proposal, and to add these 4 findings. Okay, so that is now the current motion, as seconded. Any further discussion by commissioners before we vote?
So I'm just wondering, would it make sense to provide some option under LAD standards for dual parking, but not imperviable surfaces? So you would have gravel sides instead of that kind of.
You mean on the only thing I could, in the right of way?
Yeah.
I wouldn't support that.
That would be really difficult maintenance-wise.
Yeah. Our public works would go berserk.
And actually, gravel is most gravel, and gravel in that setting would be compacted so much that it would actually be rated as impervious. So it really wouldn't help as per. You'd have to do something totally green.
It's a great idea. I mean, a few years down the road when they perfect better permeable paving and the care of it, I could see something happen in there.
Was it Issaquah they had the sidewalks, or is it the actual parking lanes that was supposed to be?
The sidewalks in Issaquah and Kirkland and all over are actually becoming pervious. Those are becoming more and more installed all the time.
Are they working?
They are working. But they also aren't. The reason why they're working better than the asphalt version is because they don't have to deal with the
fines.
The fines and the oils and so there is just it's concrete, it's a different product, and they don't have the wear and tear of the weight.
I think what you're remembering also is that Issaquah did try asphalt, and they found it to be a maintenance problem because the regular maintenance equipment, street sweepers, didn't cleanup. And so it was a suction
vacuum.
You provided us a breakdown for the street construction, not for sidewalk construction. Is that correct? In our packet, our first packet? Because it talked about the base and then the paving layers.
Oh, what the course is?
Yeah, we didn't get into sidewalk construction.
Sidewalk.
Don't think that's part of that would be a street standard.
If you read on page 3, sidewalks and ADA ramps, it tells you 5-foot minimum width, and then it says per standard plan, blah blah blah, and that those standard plans tell you all the details.
Okay. Different section.
Yeah.
Call the question.
Thank you. All right, we have motion for us to strike 1-8-foot parking lane from tonight's proposal as it is before us, and to add the 4 findings as previously read. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Unanimous. Sorry, Mike. Now it's yours.
If you do me a favor, rather than just make a report, if you can, have someone just come by council meeting.
Point of order, Mr. Chair. Yeah. We just did an amendment, but we didn't do the actual motion for the entire change, did we?
No, we did. Yeah. It was all one motion.
Yeah. I was thinking about.
Well, when I offered my amendment was to combine the two pieces, and your second made it all one motion. Okay, stick with us here. All right, moving on. Public hearing, amendments to residential design standards, North Bend Municipal Code 18.34. I won't repeat the information that I give for other public hearings. We'll just move straight to staff report. Okay. There's public hearing portion, public now. Hearing now open.
We didn't receive any comments from the public for the design standards, so you just need to go over.
Yeah. Do you have a preference of how you'd like to go through the document?
Well, I'm going to first see if there's anyone from the public wanting to speak on it. Good. Is there anyone here from the public wishing to speak on this matter? Yeah. Hearing and seeing none. We'll close the public hearing. Okay.
There we go.
Now, we'll move on to agenda item number 7, Planning Commission review and recommendation on agenda item number 6 above, the residential design standards. So now your question was,
how would you like to go through it mostly differently? So we meet your time schedule for tonight.
Yeah, so I proposed no more than 45 minutes, so about 20 after, 25 after the hour at maximum, and I wouldn't mind it being faster than that. To Jenna's question, I guess I definitely felt that the last time, working page by page and edit by edit was not an effective way. I was hoping to send out edits. I didn't do that. So what's your thoughts?
I'm assuming everyone has diligently covered each page and read through these changes. Is it Megan or Megan? Sorry.
Megan.
You're kind of running the show, right?
Yes.
So
you can say that.
Our last meeting, we went through this.
We went through this in a lot of detail.
And the concept is to clean it up, make it more efficient to read, et cetera, and connect the dots between different codes, et cetera. Yep. I'm not feeling an urgent need to go back over it.
Nope.
And I'm feeling really comfortable just saying it looks good to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's true.
Okay, great.
I didn't have anything further.
You had nothing further? Wow, this is too
awesome.
Good.
Yay!
I'm gonna be the one in the hole here. I'm with you. Like
trend. So I am gonna mention again, as I did last week. Does it feel like we were just here?
We didn't leave.
Last week, and then it was last year.
Oh, wait, so,
and I'm going to fail to find what other page of it it's on, but I just want to revisit and st- state yet again that I am super uncomfortable that we, when we went through this 2 years ago, that we very diligently had a very deep conversation about banning vinyl siding, and we all walked away with a vote in favor of not banning, and then it went to City Council. And there was a lot of interesting conversation at City Council that night. It was almost as flowerful as ours, and it ultimately was banned. And so I just want to state again that it just doesn't feel like the right thing to do.
Okay.
I don't like the ban thing.
I'm curious about that because I remember that very interesting discussion too, and you were on opposite sides of the fence in that, with all due respect. One of the things I think about when people talk about vinyl siding is the difference between vinyl and what's now the composite,
yes,
milk carton, if you will.
Yes.
That's as common, if not more common, in our part of the country than vinyl,
yes,
ever has been.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel better about saying that's a product that's got a question mark on it. I'd rather not see it.
What I recall was that my main gut was we were going to ban vinyl siding. We should just be banning vinyl. Didn't matter to me whether it was in siding,
right,
or in the,
mm-hmm, right,
window or the door, or, you know. But that being said, I still stand on we made a recommendation. Council took the recommendation and took action different, and so I personally do not want to revisit it.
Yeah.
That is your right to make a motion to that.
Right. So I am not going to make a motion to, you know, deliberate on it yet again, because I'm going to imagine where it's going to go. But I just wanted to state for the record that,
yeah,
it came in again.
Yeah.
Point out of where we were and where it went, and it's.
The only thing I might add is, and you weren't here last one, so the purposes of these standards are to define design standards that are predictable for the developer, predictable for the city, and establish a bar for what development has to meet for North Bend. And we do that in our commercial standards by not allowing metal siding to take the entire commercial building, or,
mm-hmm,
so there's ways that we look at appropriate material for different contexts, and we prohibit some in some scenarios, and in this scenario, as a city planner and looking at the neighborhoods in the region that have used vinyl siding and the aging effect of that, I do think your quality and character of your neighborhood maintains longer with the prohibition. And the ironic part is, now that we've had it and we have development occurring, we've actually had comments, two of which were, one, that our backyard setback is fantastic because nowhere else in the King County area can you find a 25-foot backyard. And number two, the materials that are used in North Bend are of a quality that people feel safe investing in. So, just food for thought.
Yeah.
I thought those were two nice comments we got. So.
Great. Yep.
Scott, I had a couple minor things, and I'd love to start to hash over a second. One question was on the, like, just in general, on a porch, is there a maximum on the porch size? There's a lot of talk about the minimums and such. Is there?
That's the only thing I was going to say something about. Now I have to add in.
Sorry. No, you pass. I've got two rounds. That's just
no max.
The whole thing is to set the porch.
I don't know that.
We want to build a big enough to park a couple cars on.
The other one was so still related to porch. So another,
do you mind telling me what page you're on so I can follow you?
Oh, 15. Yes. Well, that was just where it was brought up under building entries. But then on page 19, under garage setbacks, so it talks about low density residential zones, a minimum 50% units within a subdivision, finding site plan shall be set back from the garage, or just set back the garage from the front wall, and have a minimum of 5 feet. The remaining 50 feet maybe flat, but then it goes on to say, then there's a 60-foot square foot porch. And that just caught me as like, well, we're talking about 80 feet before, now it's 60. I guess that maybe that goes to the point where you're saying it's just kind of an even bar, like maybe just make it the same.
Dang you. Make them read that. I've got a question. I read this closely.
Okay.
This is where the brain goes.
I don't mean like, yeah, go into the details. You guys are already out of your own, so maybe I shouldn't have done that. Because I wasn't here, but I just thought.
No, you're. No,
for consistency between
the
two.
I'm
not taking
responsibility
for
it.
Well, garage says that's as well.
Not less than 80 square feet versus 60.
So, okay, I followed you up until the point where it's provided a porch of not less than 6 feet in depth by 10 feet in width.
So, and then the question is that inconsistent with where porches are called out?
Mm-hmm. To be not less than 80.
Yeah.
So, because that's 60 square feet, and then gotcha. You're just saying we had 80 written
view. Oh, places. You know, you actually found it. We changed that provision of porches on page 15 to match cottage, so it was the same. So, we just didn't catch that was in another location. On page 15, we have porches and stoops up and not less than 80 square feet. But the main thing is on a porch, to make a usable porch, you need 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our main thing. And then since we were already previous to this required 80-foot minimum, 80 square foot on a cottage, we thought, well, why wouldn't we do that on the large houses, too? So we just made those consistent, right. And we missed that one spot. Right. So you found
thank
a,
you.
You found
score.
A good
all right.
Thing
so
that we needed.
We're accepting that.
I think that's
did you have that?
I'm so glad you have 16 porches.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only other one
is three developers.
Yeah. It's a balcony on the ground, you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The only other thing on page 22, at the very end of the paragraph, it's talking about eaves on roofs of 6x12 pitch or lower shallow minimum depth of 24 inches. And then it says generous overhangs are encouraged. And I just feel like that statement. So
okay.
Nobody's going to
cross it out.
That's just added words. No necessary.
Well, and somewhere we've got a minimum. Yeah, right above it. You've got
the
a minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to do more than the minimum.
All right. Right, so you're exactly. Saying strike generous overhangs are encouraged. Okay.
Scott's the planning commission version of Gene on the council.
Oh.
It goes through these things. And
he's not willing to talk.
Oh, yeah. That's done alone. So if it's my turn, I'll back up. It's going to be very simple. So, So I was reading the edits on the preamble.
Yes.
And comparing that to on page 4, purpose, which has a variety of strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about our overall conversation around visioning and such. And my question is, do we even need this preamble? Should we just essentially strike all of that and then keep what's been struck under purpose, which to me was a great opening sentence, the overall purpose of the design standards is to ensure that development of the city of North Bend reflects the type, quality, da-da-da-da-da. I mean,
I think we might have sort of talked about it last time, and then we decided to, okay, let's clean it up and see how it is. But I agree that start with the purpose, and you preambled enough.
I mean, if the section is required to have a preamble, okay, well, let's move up those paragraphs to the preamble. But I think it's good we need to set the context.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that paragraph in B was setting the context extremely well, and we want to leave the more visioning to me, to the comp plan and to the vision statement.
It's a good way to look at it.
So,
okay.
In that same light, I'm wondering,
are we required to
how long has this preamble been part of this section?
1992.
1992
is
what I would guess.
People are attached to it.
I don't think this preamble is read by anybody, probably, other than a few of us, and if we point it to a developer. However, one thing we had crossed out, what you just brought up, the overall purpose. So we have to kind of look at what that says, because what we were getting rid of was the vision, plan, and resolution. I mean, there's stuff in there that we didn't.
I'm crossing it out to think about, right?
Yeah.
So and maybe we go there and we're out of here with, on this subject. I got one other as a comprehensive. I know the inclination of staff is to strike all the examples of photography in favor of being able to update more regularly. I'm a little concerned with that. I think in that idea, which to me the best word that has been edited in here is predictability, that went in there in letter I or 1 under B purpose. But I guess I could be okay with the notion of if say the photography were in the online version, mm-hmm. where it could be updated regularly and giving it free. But I want to see those examples there. I want to feel that what we're saying here, mm-hmm. is supported by examples that make sense. But I understand staff's notion of wanting to be able to better update. So that's my question.
My thinking in that was, I'm all for visuals, and the purpose of taking it out of the actual code is to be able to provide a booklet, which I've done in the past, and we can have that and edit it at any time that we want, and that can be available online or in our PAR meetings when developers come in. We can hand it to them, say, this is what we're talking about when you look at our residential design standards, but we don't necessarily have to adopt it.
Okay, so I might have missed it. In what you edited, do you have then a sentence paragraph there at the end that is saying
refers them to that
reference to and a specific document that would be kept as with a revision date?
We do not have that line of text.
Yeah, we kind of pondered how to do this, and we concluded that the pictures are wonderful, and we like those too. And we thought what would be nice is to establish the verbiage, because code publishing, even if it's just online, it's still a much bigger process to update any picture or what have you. And
it would still have to come.
Yeah, and then a picture is actually, definitely sets a vision in somebody's mind much more concretely than the words, which is good and bad depending on your picture. So we started thinking, oh, let's use this picture, and then we're like, ooh, look at that, or look at that, because there are other unintended consequences of the picture. So instead of bringing you guys a bunch of pictures that we weren't really feeling solid on, I personally, and I know Megan was there with me, felt that process should be another step, that once we have these, now Megan has offered to put this booklet together based on this, and then we bring that booklet.
Because you're thinking about it.
Yeah. Back to you guys, and then we adopt it that way. Mm-hmm. And so your question of whether we put something in here that references something that we're working on, I'd almost say when we bring it back to you, we'll bring that one small section and say, see, an update.
Yeah, because I'm a little confused. I mean, I like where you're going, but I'm a little confused on how, if we were to adopt this, we're done. That's the standards. And now you're saying, to bring a booklet back to us under what?
These will be the standards that people are required to, just like they are now.
The booklet would be on top of it. Is the booklet part of the standards?
It would be once we have time to staff it and add it too. So it's kind of saying to you, this what we feel that when we're sitting down with an architect, this works between two professionals. Okay, if we want to pretty it up, we can do that. It's just going to take more time. And what we'd say is, we really feel we need this because we've created a bunch of overlays that actually allow multifamily in Tanner, you know, we have a few, like, on the Tanner Park area. So we want to make sure those multifamily developments go in at a high-quality standard. So this is necessary, and I think we could supplement it in the future. And Megan actually is, this is one of her passions and definitely her skills. So she, I think, will be able to hammer this out pretty quickly and bring it back to you.
So procedurally, though, are you then asking us to pass on this section of code mm-hmm. without that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
Just as if, you know, right now your code doesn't have pictures all throughout it. So you're just staying with your same system. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go through each of these provisions and bring you what we think is a photo that works. The problem is we started putting those together, and the ones that we were looking at, we actually think weren't telling the story properly.
Yeah.
The ones we thought would be just, that's a perfect one.
I like the idea. I wonder, though, do the pros need the visual when they're reading the code?
Right.
Are we giving them
not necessarily, but I think it also helps them, but it's also for the citizens themselves when they have this in front of them, if they're looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see if I'm coming in for a permit for, you know, five houses or something, and I come to you guys and we're kind of scrabbling over what is it going to look like,
mm-hmm.
and that's when you send me out to neighborhood X and say, this address, that's pretty close. Kind of the way it works, really, right?
Most people come in with a design in mind, though. So we sit down with their design, and then we go through, or like, well, you need 16 elevations because you have 25 different lots, and show us your different elevations. And then we say, well, okay, that's, you know, and then we work through those things. So in the end, the picture will help the citizen. It's not really the developer.
Well, I'm much more focused right now on the guy that's got two lots or one lot or four lots.
Yeah.
That's not a production builder.
And these don't apply for that.
Correct.
These don't apply to the short lots.
That's true.
Yeah, look at that.
We're efficient around here.
Well, I don't feel strongly enough about it to push to keep it, but mm-hmm. I wanted to understand how that worked. To me, it's got to have some reference in it. So, and as for, I actually think it did have one minor question. Page 9, number 6, maybe it's stated correctly, but it just caught me. Manufactured home design is regulated under table, regulated by a table.
Is that
if that makes sense?
It should be manufactured home designs. Design is regulated under
code section.
North Bend Municipal Code Section Performance Standards. The word performance standards is not a... That's another good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay. Did you have any final thoughts on what we're going to do with the preamble?
Well, you may not like it, but what I would propose to the commissioners, and I'm happy again to be overshadowed by it, but that this, we have no other changes, that this just go back for final editing, come to us in black line instead of red line, and we can vote it through at the next meeting, be done with it, mm-hmm. versus trying to wordsmith it.
Sure. Yeah, it looks like it's about half as big as it really is, or twice as big as it really is.
Okay, so you want us to bring back this document with no red lines, and then you guys will kind of, okay?
All right. So that way we can see what you've edited in the preamble, how you are going to handle the text at the end to reference this photo montage, and I think we're going to give them a couple of other minor edits.
Let me just clarify that. When we bring you the photo montage, we will also bring that section that says applicability, and we'll add a sentence that says,
okay,
please see.
Okay, so this is just going to die at the end somewhere.
It's going to stay as is, mm-hmm. and then when we add it, we'll add the call out to where to go look.
Interesting.
can knock it out.
She's
in
actually
week
excited.
I'm
hoping
that.
I
just got to get that.
I got the request for Photoshop.
Yeah, I got. I just got to get the software.
Don't worry, it's only a $1,200 program.
It's not that expensive, I promise.
Anything else on agenda item 7?
Let's see.
I'll just thank you for raising that point, because I did have the concern and I didn't vocalize it, so we're removing the
Okay. The fun of the night now. Look at everybody pouring in. Agenda item 8, Planning Commission review and discussion of marijuana zoning regulations. Hearing is scheduled March 13th. That's our next meeting, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
It's just one, take one. It's only one memo or one public comment.
Okay. I can summarize what I've brought to you in addition to what's in your packet. This is just more of an updated map that Mark was able to do, and I think the copies that were in your packet weren't actually clear. I don't know if they came off. They were a little fuzzy, so I printed these out again for you guys. Were they fine? Yours are great. Okay.
He was making an appointment for the
island.
That's awesome. And the Excel spreadsheet that you have here is just from GIS from Mark, and it lists every item that has been buffered, so you can identify what exactly has a buffer around it. But Rob, do you have any suggestion as to where we start? Because I can start and we can go over the questions that you asked that we've returned to you, or we can go through the presentation. Yeah. Or we can just open it up.
I mean, yeah,
we can just open
at
up the questions.
At this point, this was several meetings ago, and so I recall we gave you a whole set of questions for what those were. I have no clue.
They're in here.
That tells you how much I answered.
Yes.
We have many.
That was my question. Yeah. Oh, check.
27.
Very well done.
Well, super.
I amend page 1 before this.
Amend page 1
aloud.
Amend page 1.
No,
the color
of the. The summary, the staff report?
Page 1, that's marijuana regulations, continued deliberations, staff report summary.
Okay.
Where are you,
Gary? First page. All the way in the front.
Right.
Behind the blue tab.
We'll lose page between the two. So I keep getting
page 1 of the fourth group of the second section.
Okay. Page 1 of the staff report. So
yes, under location criteria for recreational marijuana uses, okay. We have 9 items listed as requiring the 1,000-foot buffer.
Yeah.
I'd like to add there early learning centers, whether you classify them as either accredited or licensed or NAEYC certified.
Certified or not.
Is that part of what the Washington State Code calls for?
No, it's
not.
That would be something from North Bend.
Yeah. So starting under 9, we will just note North Bend.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'll add to that, because just a couple nights ago, Snoqualmie Ridge has a, everybody's been through there, I imagine, they're kind of their strip center as you drive into toward the ridge, toward the school. There's several retail stores. One of those is a learning center, math tutoring center.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what credential they may have. It's a retail operation, and if the next door neighbor wanted to sell marijuana, there might have conflicts. So does that fit your point? Kind of say there's some gray areas where kids might
child-friendly environment that goes exactly to the public comment.
Okay, now that you got me focused in, would you repeat what you're adding?
To add to the list early learning centers or whether they're accredited or not.
So there was a question on number six about Encompass. Mm-hmm. So is that...
That is, and it does receive public funds, mm-hmm. and so I'm not sure why or how it's supposed to be properly classified, but okay. If we called it early learning, then that would suffice, I think.
Jenna, I have a question. What happens if you have a facility that legally is selling marijuana, a site, and then after they're there, a learning center moves yeah. in. Does that question get asked?
That's one of the questions, actually.
Oh, okay.
And actually, I'll let Megan speak to that. We actually called Department of, what are they calling themselves now? Are they still?
Liquor Control Board?
Are they still just liquor?
Liquor Control Board. Well, if they have that right, from what I remember, mm-hmm. to if a marijuana retail is established and a school wants to come in and they want to locate within 1,000 feet of that establishment, that's their right.
A daycare, a school, an early learning.
Right. So that facility can come right. in, but the facility that's operating is grandfathered.
Right.
Until the lease expires.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If it were to close its doors, then it would be prohibited from reopening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Potentially for more than a year. Just as
more than a year. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Jim, did you say that you wanted to add something to that page one?
No, I think the early learning covers it.
All right. Well, Megan, now that you've got us focused on questions, yes, if you want to walk us through, are you guys good? Probably the only one in the dark.
I want to start with a thank you to the staff for providing such detail and such clarity. So it's very appreciated.
Here, here.
But I'm always number 17.
Yeah. I'm on 10.
So
I have a question. So I had brought up the question last time about homeschools and where do they fit with getting mm-hmm. recognition, and so would that fall into the not allowed near the school. Tell me, Montessori schools, are those private or are they? Which is kind of, okay, so it would fall in the private school category, therefore.
But I believe it's classified as an early learning center, in which case it should
it's
be.
Also, okay.
It's an early
it
learning
center. It would also
center.
Fall. Okay.
We're going to have to define early learning.
Yeah, we'll need to make a definition for that.
Yeah.
Well, how does the. I know this is going to keep coming up because it's so obvious. If I look at this, probably like many people are, it's like, okay, there's a new product on the market, and anybody who can get the proper permits can sell it, distribute it, or produce it, or whatever. We've got a huge body of law around liquor, around cigarettes, around any other adult products. How can we just go, okay, where does that not match? I don't know if that's our purview, but that's a logical place to start to me.
To my knowledge, we don't have any of those restrictions on alcohol, right? Or it wouldn't be all over the city as it is mm-hmm. currently.
There are no restrictions.
So mm-hmm. that's why we're stuck with this, and I think that's one of the questions before us. Are we more restrictive than state law is calling for, which goes to what Gary's adding? And so I'll just share. I'm not opposed to where you're going, but it makes me nervous in the ability to define it and defend it. The rest of this is defined for us by state law,
yeah.
and it makes it pretty mm-hmm. easy to defend in that respect.
Sure. I go to more what Jim said in the last meeting is the public participation in that exercise and how we would pass something and not be so thoughtful. I think mm-hmm. we would hear that.
And then the separate thing, and I may say this a few times as we go through this, my biggest focus, I think, is because it's this thing that will probably get forgotten if we don't, is the commercial side.
Well, I don't think it's going to get forgotten.
Well, here's my case in point. The only place that conversation is going to come up is in the gap. At the moment, EP2. Because it requires land use control and planning, and somebody's got to buy it, and somebody's got to get the, you know, the landlord or whoever they're going to structure it through. So to me, these spaces that are arguably okay for that to happen is something we should spend a little time on, particularly so that we don't have a landowner who thinks that there's something's available to them when we haven't even thought about it. And now all of a sudden we've got a, you know, 30,000 square foot grow operation in between two neighborhoods.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. So what you have in front of you is just what I-502 would create if we were regulating to I-502. Now what's going to happen is we're coming back to a public meeting, public hearing next meeting, and what we can do for you, if you want to give us some guidance, is we can A, bring a staff recommendation of what we would propose as zoning of this use, if you want to give us feedback. But basically, our intent was now to dial in on where we think it's appropriate and give you that at your next meeting.
Yeah. I would add on this, and we can do it later, but there's a church that will take out a zone.
Which one?
Off of 436 or
talking about at the end of Cedar Falls Lane.
Yeah, that one.
That's
yeah.
not noted on
there? No.
Oh, well.
A little hole there.
Arrow.
The big one?
No, it's there.
Is it? No, it's in this
no.
Is it
in
here?
It's in this no, it's not there.
Anything right here? Isn't there one?
No, I need glasses.
This is the highway interchange.
Yeah, he isn't marked right here.
It's right there.
Yeah,
right
true.
Across from the Hawks house.
Yeah, you're
right.
Well,
yeah.
Seahawks.
So what's the name of this street?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. We'll get
we'll
this
go get
on.
It.
This is
so that'll take
that was 30
seconds.
But
I know.
I know what you're talking about.
Cascade Covenant.
Big one, right?
Yes,
big
church.
So,
yeah.
So
jeez,
that,
Megan, how could you miss the biggest church in town?
So that EP1, all of those EP1s there then get zapped.
Yeah,
probably.
Yep.
What about
definitely.
What about definitely. Land, maybe vacant land, owned by any of these entities?
Sorry.
Without an established permit use? It's a great question, but I don't see how you could.
So there'd be an outside.
Not under.
If that church, let's say that that church, the building we just mentioned,
if
the structure sits on the front lot and the back lot is a parking lot or even not even used, it's a separate tax lot. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it's a good question. So you're following Jim's question is, let's say it's Cascade Covenant. The building's on one lot, one parcel, and they've got nothing on another parcel, but it's owned by the church.
It's their ownership. They're owned by their ownership.
They're owned by ownership. Yeah. What if there's no building on the parcel at all? It's owned by a church.
Or a school district.
A school district, yes.
I think it has the facility has to be there. From the way I'm reading it.
You would have to ban it. Because right, if the school purchased property to eventually build the school, I would.
Because isn't that one of
the school district didn't seem to use it.
It does go there.
I guess
I'm going to have to
We're going to confirm that one.
I'll circle back and say the commercial piece of this is really what's got my attention. The commercial, looking down at our land, our city's land, as a commercial producer, we're the only state in the country that's going down the road as far as we've gone at the moment.
Yeah, it's going to be.
And we've got money coming in like you can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Waiting to start a farm. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of paying attention.
Kind of hit on your point. I've noted this on the last time we talked about it too. It just seems to put one set of regulations on the producer, processor, retail seems kind of weird because it. Yeah, if you ended up in a retail kind of area and then you have enclosed spaces doing production, it just doesn't, maybe that doesn't fit. Like, I mean, we separate those uses now, so why wouldn't we separate retail from, I guess, production?
And that's part of what we're
going
to be trying to
provide. I've got some suggested positions on that for starting fireworks. To have some semblance of moving through, so let's do go through the questions. So anything else I'll run through 10?
Yeah.
I'll just stick with something that came to me when I saw on campus, and I thought, well, isn't there a rehab facility across? And I don't want to like go to. It just came to mind, like, do we want to think about like a rehab facility, and do we want to not have? I just throw that one out there.
No, that would be undue influence to their treatment.
With a revolving door.
Yeah, it's not great.
That's all.
But I mean, it's not. It's kind of one of those things too, though.
Well, that's the ultimate.
Probably not the jug of Sprite.
It is the ultimate, but it's like from the alcohol thing. You can go to the gas station and buy alcohol. So I thought about it and I just figured.
It's a good one. I think that's a reasonable question mark. It should.
So, Rob, you're writing down a question. Is this a question we need to answer for you?
Well,
because it's more of a judgment call question.
Yeah, I think so. I just thought I would voice it from that because it came across me.
Well, I think so. As we come forward, what I'm writing it down is and saying, hey, is that number 11? And it's a question mark in my mind. Is drug treatment, rehabilitation facility something else that we should specifically? I think that's a great pickup. And where was the state on that one? Okay. Anything else? Page 2 questions? Page 3 questions? Somebody said something about 15.
I have 17.
17?
So King County had been allotted 61 retail locations, and 11 of those are at large, and there was a 30-day open window in November. So I was just wondering, how come there isn't more data available if it was open in November? Are there not people taking up the licenses, or did they not issue them?
Sure. That's open public record, and there's a whole list of them, and as they review them, it's sort of being updated, even though the public window is closed. Currently, if there's more than the allotment, they have to do a lottery system, and that just hasn't been. They haven't. I'm guessing they haven't gone through all the applications yet to do that lottery.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And on page 4, questions. 26. Page 5, number 27.
I don't know. I'm going to have to go back to the state code that I was reading, but I could have sworn that there was something about personal use and personal growing.
There is for medical, and we are going to, as we bring, you haven't seen the regulation portion of what we're going to bring forth, and we're going to have to discuss medical differently, because there are different regs for medical.
Okay, so staff is looking at one set of regulations for medical use and one for general.
Well, no. Retail, medical, and recreation fall in the same rules. Medical is allowed to have a certain amount of plants at home.
Okay.
So that's where we'll have to define.
So that's where it'll go slightly different.
And Jenna, will you be addressing more than just plant forms of medical treatment?
Frozen brownies?
No, pills, liquid.
For medical or for both?
Medical.
Yeah, we'll have to look at the regs say for home. Now that's interesting. Pills, I would have thought it's just similar to
a prescription.
Any other prescription, yeah. But we'll check that out. That's a good point.
Yeah, they have to come from, you know, certain places.
Yeah. You have to get them where you need to get them.
So,
forward.
My next question is just a little confusion about what you're trying to tell me on page 5 of the overall section, which is the table of option 1. Sure.
Is there not? So, under producer, under this, what is marijuana producer? Just the definitions.
Mm-hmm.
You can have up, the limit is 2 million. So is there a tier 4, or does tier 3 go up to that? It just has, you know, it defines up to 30,000 square feet under 3 tiers. But then.
Correct. I think that applies to, they can have multiple locations, and that's the total. Is that correct?
That's a lot of locations. Okay.
That's a good
question. We need to all clarify that.
Thanks,
but
Matt, tier
3 is the last tier. Okay. It's the final tier.
Yeah, we do there's know that. Tier 4. And then, that was on about that.
Under the retailer, I don't know if you've seen anything under the... It says that they're allowed to have 4 months of...
Their average inventory.
Oh, their average inventory. Well, what is that? Well, so what is allowed for, what is considered average inventory? And, like, is there any regulation of quantity? Or I don't know how that all plays into things, but it kind of makes it sound like there could be a lot of producer processors, and then you've only got a certain amount of retailers, which may have to hold a lot of product, or maybe we'll be going through.
Right.
But I was just curious as to the clarity.
Well, I guess you really wouldn't be able to get to that until you had established a sales history to be able to get to your point.
Right, so is there no limit on that, I guess?
I think this would be a very difficult thing to administer. It was probably put in the event there's a trouble retailer that, you know, constantly is in trouble for some type of, you know, like in the bar world, over pouring, and the recreational marijuana, it might be oversell. I don't know. This is probably just a way to start putting the screws down on a business that. And at that point, you'd probably, code enforcement would go in and ask for your average inventory and then start tracking it. But it would have to be through a code enforcement process.
Well, it's a limited, you know, until it gets up and going, there's a limited supply. So maybe that prevents one person from monopolizing the market.
We'll ask that question, because one thing we've been able to do is get a hold of
liquor control board. Yeah, they're really responsive.
That's pretty impressive.
I know.
Are the licenses per address? Or per retailer? Can a retailer such as, I don't know, ABC seller have multiple locations, and then when he applies for his access to the third location or the fourth location, he actually averages his other stores? Just
way beyond our.
Well, and we're not actually dealing in the city with these permits, right? And we're not going to be granting permits, are we?
We're granting business licenses for them. The state will.
They've got the permit part from the.
They're asking where liquor enforcement is, right? So,
just seeing the crossover
by liquor control board, correct?
So they're going to be dealing with
the first level.
And I think that's part of it, is that they've got to deal with most of these things that we're wondering about.
Right.
It would be both, because in the end, when we adopt, because remember, there's always that option that cities have been able to ban them, not, you know, we don't know if that's going to be.
What's the city's role in regulating the sure shot?
If we know there's a problem at it and it has a North Bend business license associated with it, we go through the code enforcement steps, and that would include at this point with SureShot, for example, contacting the police first and like.
But does their business license? So you're saying if there were a complaint about overpouring at a particular establishment,
we would get a hold of the police department and they would get a hold of the control.
Okay, so that's. Okay, so the city's not really enforcing.
Who's filing that complaint?
Who is there to file that complaint?
It happens every time.
Does anybody complain for underage?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks.
Sorry. Just thick smoke and thin smoke. Is that where you're going here?
When we're talking about the processors, I have hesitated to Google this, and so I don't know, but in the manufacturing of hashish or infusing products or making oils, we have, you know, odors that will be permeating in our air or, you know, smoke? I don't know.
Rob, you want to take that?
Absolutely.
I don't know where you go for that information safely without
Having someone knock on your door.
Particularly Google-based.
Sure. The Liquor Control Board has regulations to prevent that from any odors escaping.
And we also have performance standards on noise,
So this goes to air quality and manufacturing.
So there's levels of protection there.
Light.
Yeah.
Again, it would be regulated as any other business.
Okay. Right. Vibration. That's the other one.
No. If you're talking outdoor, though, if you live next to a farm, you're going to probably smell that.
Yeah. You know, there was a show on TV, and the guy who did medical marijuana in a farm, it was all covered. It was all indoors. So I don't know if they would necessarily.
Well, they talk about the outdoor and the
given
barriers
our wildlife,
and the sort of someone's going to do it, they're going to have pretty good security.
Unless they're not from this area.
our wildlife. Yeah, they'll always come on.
That's probably a good point. Our presumption is that any of these facilities are going to be fully enclosed.
It's going to have to.
Right?
But with our climate.
The code, this state law doesn't actually mandate that.
Not covered, but that's it has true. To have an 8-foot
right.
fence.
But it literally might not have to be in a building.
Correct. Right. It can be outdoors.
So that's probably the only one that has to be like an 8-foot fence isn't going to keep some buddy who wants to go in there and do something. Right. But I have a feeling that anybody who's willing to grow outdoors is going to have some pretty good security.
They'll probably have 24-hour security.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So my question went to, again, on page 5, there's a table, option 1. What are you trying to tell us? If I read the table correctly, you're proposing banning.
Permitted.
She's just showing there's how you could show it in. Okay, the odd part is this to try to show this. Let's just pretend for sake of conversation. The only place we're going to allow it is in the purple zone at exit 31. To reflect that in a chart that only has a P is going to be impossible.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is have something that might just have, like she has on the bottom, C map A. We're going to have to have
a reference.
To a map. Mm-hmm.
I'm just against tonight. No,
that's totally a good question. Yeah. Actually, she had that question.
Go see the map.
I had the
same
yeah.
what I was like.
It's basically C map. That's what that means. That means it's
answering the question.
It's right.
Okay.
I guess to kind of go with that alcohol, because I guess that's where for me and the state is kind of in my mind kind of said with the difference being the 1,000-foot barriers, things like that, but it's essentially kind of an over 21 alcohol kind of related thing. Where would, with what is left, if there was, I don't know if alcohol is broken into processing, production, and sales, but if it is, where would that be allowed? Would that be allowed in any of these areas? Because in my mind, I guess part of me feels like if the production of alcohol is allowed, then why wouldn't the, you know what I mean? So I just would be curious how those things line up, since mm-hmm. that's what we're kind of classifying it as, and the areas that are left over. Mm-hmm. Like, would all three of those spaces of alcohol be allowed in those areas? And that'd be an interesting question.
But with at least beer, you can do that in your home.
Mm-hmm. Well, alcohol is
right.
Alcohol, obviously as a retailer, it can go in any commercial zone right now.
Mm-hmm.
As a distillery, a brew pub, a winery, it goes within falls within. We have food and beverage. We have a distiller actually out in the Trucktown area. And they're processing whiskey, I think.
Or at least a hue and I'll try.
So it was, I know, which is funny. So it's manufacturing, so they met the manufacturing standards. So this, I think you're seeing the first steps of zoning that will probably evolve more like alcohol. But these are definitely different than the way alcohol is regulated.
Right.
At this point.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where I was. In my mind, I don't see quite the. Since it's being put on that same level, it seems that we should look at it somewhat on that level, or at least see how it would fall in. So
did that answer your? I agree with you. Did that answer the question? Does that kind of tell us where?
Sorry, I mean that, I think
distillery and
when we kind of zone in on these final maps, I know that might be a pain, but if we could kind of be like, I would like to see how the alcohol falls into. Are we gonna not allow marijuana somewhere, but one of these areas of marijuana where we're allowing alcohol? I would be curious as to that.
Let me try and gently set the city in it. My understanding is that there may be a lease let for a city facility to be leased to a winery. Is that winery only pouring? Are they retail? Are they production?
They produce at another plant. They bring it here and repackage it, and then but they have a tasting room. So they're not
fermenting.
Fermenting
here. Okay, it's a pure repackaging. What's this repackaging mean? They're bringing in the barrel and filling the bottle.
No, they're bringing the barrel and then they have a kind of a plastic almost like that camel pack type thing that you put on your, it's a plastic,
like a bag?
Bag, thank you. Yeah,
a little bladder,
so
there you
that's
go.
That's what they put their wine in.
So it's like box, wine, bladder, thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, that's here in the DC core, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Bob, can I ask two quick questions?
Absolutely.
You guys have, this is not the first time you've
looked
through, so just a question, because the council really hasn't delved into it. I'm so glad you guys have started with this, because I'm wrestling. I know we all are. Have you guys had taken a general direction, which is, do you want to be more restrictive, less restrictive, or you're just still trying to process all this?
I think my first notion was it's really legal, right? And accepting that before you can move forward to, well, okay, now it's legal. How should it be treated? Well, you look at what the state gave as guidelines, and then you start thinking about what other factors you want to weigh, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't want to be a lot more restrictive, but I want to be sensitive to what is valued in this community and what a great place it is to raise a family.
I think some of our conversation, we're going to comment on what was essentially around, we talked about, we've heard about other communities just outright banning, because there's an opinion from the Attorney General that that could be done. And were we looking at that, interested in that, versus do we really want to deal with this all again, because it's going to come right back, is, so... There's been some of that discussion. I've continued to think about that one.
You guys are wrestling with some of the same things I am, which is...
Yeah. It's a difficult one. I'll say from my personal perspective, and it's probably pretty clear from some of the comments I've made, I struggle to want to make this any more restrictive than we deal with alcohol, and beyond what the state law has imposed and sets out. Because I personally believe, based on what I've studied and read and heard, that marijuana is not nearly as damaging as alcohol. So I struggle to be more restrictive with that.
We had a workshop. We had a brief conversation we touched on just briefly. But we had our new police chief.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I said, from a law enforcement, is this going to be a nightmare? How do you feel about this? Is this something you don't want to see coming? His answer was interesting, and I'll pass it on with your thoughts. He said, 10 years from now, we're going to look back at this, and it's going to be commonplace. It's coming. So, fighting it is maybe pointless.
Yeah.
He said,
yeah.
You're going to look back and laugh at it, just kind of like bars and all that. Mm-hmm. And he did not have a problem. We could deal with it. So he wasn't overly concerned. From that point of view, the legal side, from law enforcement, it was an interesting answer. I was kind of surprised by it, but just thought I'd pass it on to you guys.
I think it might have been Brendan. Someone in our last meeting made that almost same exact comment that this, 10 years, it's going to be like, why did we toil over this for so long and hard? To me, I feel like it's the whole ban thing again is... to me, just feels like not the right thing. It feels way harder to deal with. But again, trying to be sensitive to, what people feel about it. But Jim, you said something last time that keeps coming back in my brain is to think about it from the perspective of if wherever, here, wherever the two or three places are, that we can do this. If someone's out there growing and selling, that means taxes for this community, and all those taxes go to the school, and how hard has it been for them to pass stuff to get money for schools? To me, it's like, think about it in that perspective, and it's a whole different...
Well, I do think about the tax dollars, and I want to make sure we were sold the lottery on that. So I'm going to toss out again what I did the last meeting is that I just don't see a whole lot of choices here, and we can go, and so I'm looking forward to the public hearing. I'm looking forward to seeing what staff's got to go for, but I'll just put out that my gut's kind of telling me that we should be looking at processor allowability in EP2 and retailer allowability of SS31IC. That's kind of my opening.
Yeah,
but different classifications, right? Retail at IC at 31. And the reason I'm saying 31 is because that's where it's developed already, right? We've got developed versus 6 or 34.
So you're saying not IC?
That's my opening, because it's not really developed in the same way. Right. That also spreads the use. I don't know what to do with producer. If we're going to include producer, I'd probably go EP2 also. Those should stay in industrial.
Let me ask this question. I think we were on the same page that to start with, and I think you are going to readdress this issue a couple of years from now. But retail made sense at exit 31. It's not the proximity to numerous residences is, you know, and it is very transient oriented commercial area of our town versus the inner core. And then this area over here also has very little residential mix, where this actually, this EP2 has some residential mix in it. So that was one of the considerations we've been popping around in our mind as well. As a processor, does it make more sense to be towards that end of town where we don't have the residents? Now, what we do have at that end of town is Tollgate Farm, though. So there's a different part, you know, but obviously it's buffered, but that's just...
Right.
That's what kind of we're weighing it for.
That's the backside of the Nintendo property, right?
Yeah.
Nintendo and the backside of
it. Yeah, like Nintendo has a bunch of property there that's vacant, you know, so that area, basically.
Now, coming from someone, who lives down at the other end, I personally don't have issue if someone stood up some commercial building and started growing. I personally don't care. I know a lot of people in my neighborhood will flip lids over it, but I think the thing that's more concerning to me are those three or four homes that are right there.
Mm-hmm, that's what I was talking
Those,
about.
That to me feels really.
Yeah.
Or any commercial operation.
Well, I mean, so to me, in my head, those people purchased their homes knowing that that was commercial. And so, yeah, there was going to be some kind of commercial activity. But I think this potentially.
Well, I guess where my head goes with it, Piper, is, and which is what I wanted to ask staff in regard to EP1 versus 2, is what would be the analogous uses and where would those fall within our code? See, when I'm looking at this, I'm not thinking about the product. I'm thinking about the type of production activity, the type of manufacturing activity that we're talking about. If this were a indoor tea, green tea, oolong production. It's like, who's gonna raise a fuss? Because, and so I'm looking at it the same way. If it's controlling the odor, if it's entirely enclosed, if it's, you know, you've got all of the noise and light and smell abatement going on.
Yep.
What's it do? I just found out. I didn't know we had a distiller.
Okay. I didn't know which, that either.
Which of those residents who might raise concern about this even knows there's a distillery?
Right.
You know,
it's just balancing the logical with the kind of being sensible. When you get the letter like this one that is the extreme opposite, do not want it, period.
Yep.
So it's just kind of balancing that with just the logicalness of, call it alcohol and...
Yeah.
And with that, I mean, I guess it's like it's really sad to hear that Roadies is moving away.
Makes me so sad.
Make a point.
Yes.
That place is awesome. You should go there before if you haven't, before they move to Preston. Take loss to be.
Popeyes didn't fill it in for you?
I know, I'm like,
no, it does not.
Build a building that they
anyway,
can put their stuff
in. If, I mean, if there's a, allowed to be a bar that goes into like a place there, a retail kind of like you, then I don't see why we wouldn't allow a retail
exactly.
establishment.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like,
that's why I just wanted to get it out and get it brought on the table.
And I guess just a small quick thought on like the whole band thing. I mean, it seems like there's quite a bit of talk about that, but either you're going to go get it elsewhere and bring it back, or it creates a market for someone to provide for people who don't want to travel to go get it. So it's like then you create a middle market. It's kind of
Other thought on that too is the retail establishments actually are handling now the medical.
And or what?
Are handling the medical marijuana.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that's a different twist into what it's not necessarily just for recreational uses, those areas. So May and I have a question, and so we're going to not only bring you proposed locations, but potentially some performance standards to chew on.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those performance standards when it comes to a processor is required to be indoors per the state law. Production is not. So for the outdoor growing, you know, I think I, in my mind, was leaning towards this part of town if we were going to allow outdoor growing, because at that end of town we do have a more farm, you know, it's do you guys have
what you're saying is that if we were to go with EP2, for instance,
yes,
on producer category, theoretically we could have an LPO.
Yes, unless we say
no,
and the performance, yes.
I would definitely be with that.
But to hit on what you said earlier, would someone who wants to go, if they would grow tea leaves, would that be allowed?
Right now, I think commercial greenhouses and commercial farming, I think it would be. I'd have to look to confirm, but...
Yep.
Then I guess I would have an issue.
And if the city would buy me an iPad, I'd be able to do that.
Work it, girl. Work it.
Nicely done.
Well, perhaps on that order for the... Photoshop.
Put it that whole way.
Put that on the iPad.
I can go to the Microsoft store and get you a Windows tablet.
Okay.
And you can upload Word documents.
What are they thinking these grow operations, how much land they're going to use?
I don't know.
Regulated.
How large
the grow? Tiers.
That's a tier one regulated.
That's the actual land that they can be used for. Growing or process?
This is the growth.
I think that may. I wonder if that's just the canopy or if that's the land.
Okay, so 30,000 square feet. How many acres?
43 by 60.
So
it's less than an acre. That's tiny.
It's
less than an acre.
That's as large as
they
can be.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're going to clarify, because then it says up to 2 million minutes.
So a grow operation can only be an acre?
Well, this is the way they do it is they say these tiers.
These are tiers.
Right. So then, but limited up.
2 million square feet.
Yeah.
Okay. So 2 million is the max.
So we still need. That was the important question. We need some more clarification between. We got a 30,000 square foot tier three. How does that relate to 2 million square feet?
The only reason I'm kicking that around, just you guys probably have thought of this, is if an operation comes in, we lose a lot of this land for other uses that we may have been thinking about using. You know, if they can go up to 2 million square feet, if I'm reading that right, is that land that we want to give up, or is it maybe another area?
Well, I think
that's industrial light.
Well, again, it goes back to the question of since for instance, we don't allow warehousing because we're looking for jobs.
Right.
What sort of job generation are we talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly.
Because we don't have a lot of zoning like that's light industrial.
That's very
limited.
It's very limited.
If you lost all that grow operation, you don't have anything EP2 left in town.
Just think of that 2 million square feet of taxes on that. I don't care.
You're right. I'm just saying.
And I'm just saying.
Do you want to maybe have it in a different spot? Well, and Piper's concerns are also an addition. Well, I was thinking from a land
Well, I think the clarification is good is because I certainly wouldn't be advocating that we permit it. Well, in fact, our code already wouldn't allow a 2 million square foot building.
No.
Right.
We've got limits on building size, so they're bigger than 30,000.
Imagine Nintendo decides to stop making the actual chips and the actual devices that people buy to play their games. And the warehouse space just down the street, pick up for sale.
It's not an emotional.
So, I mean, I that's the piece I kind of want to think about, because that will change the dynamics, not so much of the use of the building, because it's coming in and coming out, it's distribution, it's whatever, depending on whatever the service wants to do. But because of our freeway corridor, we're the state and the land that people are paying attention to, it could change a lot of things very quickly, and we're, I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but this is our opportunity to deal with that. It won't be there if we've spent all our time talking about retail and keeping the kids safe, and now all of a sudden we've got, you know, our biggest square footage building in town is a grow operation.
Well, I think that's exactly where the conversation is. And what I heard staff saying is, hey, we're looking at that area.
It has the least impact here, too.
Yeah. So it's good, you know, it's a good point. That is where it's what are the commercial areas?
So to circle back,
processor areas.
To circle back to your start of this whole conversation, I'll just say I don't think anybody here has really said, no way, just stay out. I don't think the energy's there. I can't speak for you exactly, but I haven't heard that. But somewhere between there and follow the law, don't forget we're a destination for that concept. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of ways we can deal with this. You know, you can definitely find a location for the retail, and you could prohibit the other. Mm-hmm. That's one, you know, and for lack of the, you know, prohibit is but ban the processor and producer. Or you could zone those, and we would be a highly publicized place for it on the I-90 corridor. So if they are allowed, you probably will find them occurring. Without, and so, you know.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Anything new, anything more? Mm-hmm. Staff have any other questions of us? We give you enough direction to know where we're heading.
I'll add one more piece to that. Just to kind of calm down my energy here. So it's more like as we've just gotten started. We've been shut down for 12 years, and we've just gotten started building homes for families. And there's an overlay that's sitting here right now that has to do with marijuana, particularly in my mind, production. If we become the star attraction for production, distribution, or anything that's significant that everybody's going to talk about, I think it could change our culture in a way that these people who are buying and building houses may not appreciate. So that's the piece of the puzzle. It's, you know, why do people come to North Bend? Because what you can answer that question right now. They have an answer. Because
it's green.
If there's if it's green and smoking, there's a whole other answer, right?
Well, yeah. So I hear where you're going. I don't think I agree.
Okay.
You know, I don't think we're talking mutually exclusive.
I feel like, I mean, especially on the production side, that stuff's going to be so, just like everything else, enclosed. And And if anything, it's almost better to maybe have that if you're talking about people being frowning on having something in the town, because no one's going to notice. A lot of people probably don't even know Nintendo exists. They know there's a big building there, but I don't think there's going to be huge marijuana leaves on any of these facilities trying to attract attention. There's going to be people going to work, doing their job, and there's going to be trucks coming and go, but there's no smoking activity or any actually illicit behavior associated with those facilities. Yeah. So if they're bringing in good revenue, then I don't understand kind of way we're trying to differentiate them from another use that we've allowed.
I think it's more, it's to be aware of the national politics, the national conversation that's going to go on, how people think, what are we all about? If we're going to feed that fire just because we happen to have the land to do it with, I'm just saying pay attention, because it'll get outside of the thought process that everybody's thinking about pretty quickly.
on pavements on both sides.
Next step is next meeting, we'll get a public hoping and expected to get some more feedback from the public, and then we'll be seeing, from what you said, staff's first recommendations and draft performance standards along with that, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to settle this at the next meeting. It's going to go...
And even our... And we basically, we have
more after that.
1 week to turn around recommendations, so ours will probably be draft.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Got it.
So quick question. On page 10, the list of applicants to the city, are you keeping this updated? Because it looks a little bit expanded since our last meeting.
It is. Uh-huh. It has been updated. I believe one just changed their name. It's the same location. And then there was another retailer that came in. But they're the same same address. They're going after the same address. Although those are in, they are in buffered areas.
Do they know that? Are they wearing that?
When they applied, they, you know, we didn't have these draft maps. No one, yeah. So during that window, most people were just, it was a gamble, essentially.
And we have been,
especially if they knew the town, they would know.
To this, so we've kind of said, hey, wait until the package together.
But I mean, some of this is like blatantly obvious that you wouldn't be able to do this.
Right.
Call 8 to close. Moving on to agenda item number 9 that we were getting to at 8:20. Ah, Mike, funny man. Planning Commission recommendation 2014-15 comprehensive plan amendment scope of work. So we had a public hearing on this last time. We just failed to pass it. So that's the main request of staff is that we just move forward with passage. I got to say, versus my boasts of earlier, 2 meetings ago maybe, I'm getting the sense that we're not going to be able to go through these items as fast. I think we've got more things coming at us, new things coming at us. I'm seeing staff struggling already with trying to turn stuff around. I know it's obvious, you know, to me, it was a big packet, some pretty big items here, and I didn't get through this whole packet. So,
but there's a lot of intelligence to put at the very end of our packet. So we're tired. Let's just sign it.
One thing I would say is this is a process that we need to do with us. We need to approve a scope of work as part of our comp plan amendment process. I have clearly stated many times to our, you know, to everybody at the staff and to you guys, and I will to council, that this is a moving target. And this is right now best guess. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep this updated for you because in the end, you know, it is what it is. You get through topics as you get through them, as you ask for more information or what have you. So I really don't think the state's going to come down on us with a big hammer if we don't make the deadline.
One thing I noticed dropped from this draft, this North Bend Way overlay was on our earlier one.
Yeah.
Did that go away?
East North Bend overlay, yeah, it did, for now. And it was more of a priority thing and just thinking through the needs. There's been discussion of whether we should readdress the truck issue. Right now, the code says additional truck parking is prohibited unless a developer puts together this regional transportation analysis and shows mitigating all the impacts of that trucking use in North Bend. That's a pretty tall order. So because it says it's prohibited unless, we didn't feel like it was necessary to rehash that based on the workload.
I think so. That was going to be my comment to this. I'm fine passing exactly what's in front of us. What I would be saying is that I'm certainly going to keep our attention best I can on what we're required to be doing this comprehensive plan review. And so things like that that are not part of it are going to have to fit in where they came and get shuffled to the sidelines. So that's my view of it.
I'm biting my lip.
Motion to approve that?
Motion to approve the 2014-2015 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Scope of Work.
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Nice. We're done. We're almost to adjournment. I wanted to share before we adjourn that maybe Jonathan wants to share, but last year we talked about a change in zoning where the CenturyTel facility sits, and that's going to be coming out to us along the lines that we discussed. Is my understanding of looking at it again. Is that right,
yes,
Staff?
Yes.
So I just want to give you the heads up that we're going to look at that. And so the discussions that we had and council had were positive for getting some action.
That's the one on the road.
Down by Safeway. So we are going to bring it back to you guys at our next meeting.
Absolutely.
Not everyone was here when I was here last time, but I'm going to say it again. I want to thank you all for everything you guys do. These packets, I see them in CD. By the time they get to me, they're half the size because you guys have done all this work. I can't thank you guys enough. This is so tedious. And with the comprehensive plan stuff coming up this year, your workload is going to be miserable. I mean, let's be honest. I'm dreading it at CED, and as I said, I'm going to get the packet to be half the size. So for myself and everyone on council, we really, really appreciate what you guys do here. And we may not agree on everything, and I'll remind you, like, on aluminum siding, but if you look at the size of the packets, and when we think about it, it's one item out of 400, the level of trust and the work, how well we work together overall is incredible, and I can't thank you guys enough for everything you do. So I know I said it to the rest of you when I was here back in November, and say it to all again, really do appreciate it. Very sincere.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming.
Means a ton because I feel like you miss the lively conversation that we have and really understand the core of why we may make a decision it's awesome.
Anytime if you guys feel there's something coming up you want me here, please just invite and I'll be glad to show.
Appreciate that.
And I'll offer the same thing the other way. If there's a work study that's creative as there was something that relates to planning. Maybe throw an invite our way.
Yeah, in general. Yeah. No, and Rob has been doing a great job coming to CED meetings, which I think has really helped us work together. We all kind of know what's coming down the pike, too. So I think that seems to be working better, I think, this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
But thank you again, guys. Really do appreciate it.
Anything else? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? All in favor?
Wow.
Enough.